It is time for your KDNK local newscast for this Monday morning, February 13th. I'm Steve Cole, live from the heart of Carbondale's Creative District. A lawsuit has been filed challenging President Trump's executive order that would eliminate two regulations for every new one adopted. Eric Gladys has more.
Public interest, law, environmental, and labor groups are suing to stop the Trump administration's executive order to cut government regulations. The order, signed January 30th, requires federal agencies to eliminate two existing regulations for every new one enacted, and new regulations must have a net cost of zero in the current fiscal year without considering the value of benefits to public health and safety. According to Robert Weissman, president of the watchdog group Public Citizen, that would require agencies to violate existing law governing the regulatory process, as well as the Administrative Procedure Act.
The Administrative Procedure Act says they are not permitted to engage in decisions that are arbitrary and capricious. This executive order requires them to take into account irrational factors, things that exactly fit that definition.
Supporters of Trump's executive order say it will clear away unnecessary regulations that hamper the growth of small businesses and cripple the economy. David Goldston with the Natural Resources Defense Council says the two-for-one requirement can't help but stymie the issuing of new regulations. He points to last year's update of the Toxic Substances Control Act, the first major revision in 40 years.
Why would finally catching up with chemicals that have been on the market for decades mean that we don't need a clean air regulation or a clean water regulation or, for that matter, a regulation for another chemical?
He says the executive order puts industry's concerns about the cost of complying with regulations ahead of the public's concerns about the problem that the regulation is trying to solve. Weissman says reports by the White House Office of Management and Budget consistently have found that the benefits of regulations are significant.
The most significant rules adopted had benefits that outweighed costs as much as 14 to 1. But if you look at the big rules, the benefits maybe are 10 times or more greater than the costs.
The lawsuit challenging the executive order was filed Wednesday morning in the Federal District Court in Washington, D.C. This is Eric Gladys reporting for KDNK.
The Hemp Industries Association, or HIA, a nonprofit trade group, has filed suit against the Drug Enforcement Administration for what the group claims is an illegal attempt to regulate hemp foods and other non-psychoactive hemp products as drugs. The group states that the DEA is in contempt of court for violating a 2004 U.S. Court of Appeals order prohibiting the agency from regulating hemp food products as Schedule I controlled substances. Joe Sandler, attorney for HIA, says the agency has no power to regulate hemp seed, hemp oil, and food and beverage products made from them. Meanwhile, the Denver Post reports that Colorado's marijuana dispensaries took in $1.3 billion from recreational and medical cannabis sales in 2016. Last year was the third year of regulated recreational pot sales in the state. In the first year, combined sales of recreational and medical marijuana generated almost $700 million, which increased to over $990 million. In the second year. The Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe's latest lawsuit to block the Dakota Access Pipeline involves a claim that approval of the pipeline violates the Lakota people's religious rights. The tribe claims that construction across Lake Oahe will desecrate sacred grounds. Energy Wire reports that the tribe could have trouble proving this. Experts cite the 2008 case of the Arizona Snow Bowl ski area, where tribes fought the use of treated wastewater for snowmaking. An appeals court ruled that snow made from wastewater did not prevent the tribe from practicing its religion. Attorneys for the Cheyenne River Sioux, however, say that the tribe would be unable to perform rituals that depend on pure water. A hearing is slated for this afternoon in U.S. District Court. A proposal to repeal Colorado's state health care exchange and move to the federal exchange has garnered a lot of debate at the Capitol and set off a larger fight about the future of the Affordable Care Act nationally. Penda Berkland sat down with State House reporters to discuss the dynamic as part of our weekly Capitol Conversation.
I'm here with John Frank, a reporter for the Denver Post, and Ed Sealover with the Denver Business Journal. John, the Republican sponsor of this bill has gone to great lengths to say that it's not an indictment of Obamacare. He says he simply feels like the federal exchange will be cheaper for the state.
Senator Jim Smallwood has made the case that how the exchange is funded puts it on tenuous financial ground. He points to the fact that we've had assessments for 2 years to keep the exchange afloat, and he points to a $5 million tax break that insurance companies get to help fund the exchange. He wants those to go away. He thinks it'd be a better deal if we move our folks onto the federal exchange, that Coloradans would then buy healthcare on healthcare.gov. The problem with that is that argument slowly being eroded the more we learn. For instance, when Nevada gave up their federal exchange, Connect for Health folks report that it cost $23 million to end that state exchange and connect to the federal exchange. That kind of undercuts the cost argument, according to critics. So we're seeing lots of debate about the cost of this. And of course, half of this is getting wrapped up in the national politics, too, which makes it even more difficult.
Ed, I wanted to touch on that. There have been rallies about saving the Affordable Care Act, saving Obamacare. This can't really be separated, or it's not being separated from what's happening nationally.
Well, it's really hard to separate it from what's happening nationally when there's such an uncertainty about what is going to happen to the federal exchanges. Are they going to simply disappear? Are they going to be replaced by tax credits? A lot of people point to the fact that there are more than 175,000 people who are in the exchange right now. And yes, certainly all of them can transfer over to the federal exchange, and all of them can get the same tax breaks in the federal exchange that are offered through the state exchange. But what they can't get is a connection to people. If they have questions, it's going to be a lot harder to call someone up and ask them for help in this. And they can't get any real sense of whether or not transferring to the federal exchange means that in another year, they're going to have to find another option because there isn't a federal exchange.
One thing we've heard from Democrats who oppose this has been, we don't know what's happening nationally. Let's not change this, redo it, and then have to switch to something else. But the exchange has also said, hey, we could stick around even if Obamacare gets repealed. Is that realistic?
It's an interesting discussion to have. And the exchange right now is planning for its future, regardless of whether they repeal Obamacare. It sees an opportunity to serve as kind of a regional portal, a regional hub for a number of states where residents in those states can go to this website to buy insurance. I kind of like to think of it like a LendingTree.com, a central place where you can go shop for exchange plans and shop for insurance plans. But yes, it entirely depends on what they do in Washington on whether that would even be possible.
Ed, some of the Republicans who support repealing the state exchange said things like moving to the federal exchange will give us more choice. The state exchange isn't a Colorado solution. Does that kind of go against what we typically hear from Republicans?
Yeah, you rarely see Republicans saying, hey, we'd like to take this state solution and make it a federal solution. And it feels very Hamiltonian in that way. And their original statements can be kind of odd to hear, especially things like this is not a Colorado solution. But what I think Senator Tim Neville, who particularly said that, means by this is we think the federal government's going to blow this up. It's not a matter of actually even just turning this into the federal exchange, which they think works as well as the state exchange right now. But the idea is that they're going to take and they're going to let the states go nuts with their health plans. They're going to turn things over for block grants and give states more allowances on what they're going to do. And through that process, eventually, Colorado can sit back down and come up with a more Colorado solution. But it is really interesting here because in 2011, when the exchange was created by a bipartisan bill, you heard over and over, we need a Colorado solution. And this is it.
Thanks. That was Ed Seelover with the Denver Business Journal and John Frank with the Denver Post. I'm Benta Berkland at the State Capitol, and this is Capitol Conversation.
Amy Taylor is the newest member of KDNK's Board of Directors. Gavin Dahl learns more about the nurse and fundraising specialist who moved to the Valley last year.
Quite a few years ago, I went to Colorado College and learned how much I love it here. And 2 years ago, I came to visit friends that live in Glenwood Springs and thought, oh my gosh, this is where I want to be. So I found a way to make that happen.
So you landed a job with Valley View.
Yes. I've been a nurse for 2.5 years at a huge hospital in New Jersey where I was living. And now to have like a community hospital where you see people after they've been your patients is very different and wonderful. And it's a great organization and place to work.
But you haven't been a nurse for your whole career. Tell us a little more about your background.
Well, I've always been involved in nonprofits because I'm one of those do-gooder people persons. And so I first did community organizing and fundraising at a nonprofit that serves the visually impaired in New York City. Mm. And from there, along the way, I got a master's in nonprofit management and became a grant writer and did fundraising and development for about 5 or 6 years, particularly with an international nonprofit.
Before you became a KDNK fan, did you know about community radio?
Yeah, actually, I'm glad you asked me that question because I have some strange, unique experience as a human rights observer in Guatemala.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I did that work for about 2 years. And community radio in rural areas of Guatemala is extremely important and helps to organize people around community events and serve different people who speak many different Mayan languages and serves each small community in really a fascinating and great way.
Upon moving to the Valley and discovering KDNK as a media outlet, you said, basically, I could help with the fundraising at this organization.
Yes, exactly. I'm a member of the fundraising committee, which has a lot of new energy, good ideas, commitment to the station. My favorite thought about this is that as a nurse, we focus on patient-centered care and really providing the needs of the patient, meeting those needs. And this is community-centered radio. So here we are serving the members that listen to our station, and that's what I'm here to help make happen.
Are you currently a member?
Of course.
For you, what kind of membership works for you? I don't mean the dollar amount, but do you do every month? Do you just do once a year?
I give monthly, and that allows me to plan my own budget because I give also to other nonprofits. And I found that's the easiest way to give a significant amount of support by the end of the year, but not to have it hit your checkbook in a tough way.
Amy, thank you so much for all the work the committee has done to help us give some great thank you gifts to folks who get their early bird renewals in. As long as you get your membership renewed before the pledge drive starts by February 28th, you can be entered to win some really, really cool stuff.
Gavin, I want to thank you for serving the radio station and also congratulate you for becoming the new general manager.
Thank you so much.
That was new KDNK board member Amy Taylor. KDNK's next board meeting is next Monday, February 20th at 5:30 p.m.